The gospel we just heard ended with the information that Jesus' fame spread throughout the region of Galilee. The reason Jesus' fame spread throughout the region of Galilee was because the people who had gathered that day in the synagogue and at other moments leading up to that time and had heard Jesus' teaching and had witnessed Jesus working did not keep it to themselves. They went out and they told people what they had witnessed, what they had heard, and how it was changing their lives. They witnessed to what God was doing in their lives. We often think about prophets, and we think about miracles, and we think about St. Paul traveling around the ancient world and doing these wondrous things. But right down actually at the core of all of those activities is just people. People who were alert to what God was doing in front of them and inside them and didn't keep it to themselves. Who shared how God was revealing God's self in the world to them. And that's what we've been doing. That's what the season of Epiphany is about. And that's what these Epiphany stories are about. And our first storyteller this morning is Terry Leversett.
Good morning.
Morning.
Most of you know me as the outgoing administrative assistant, and some of you have also heard my parts of my personal testimony in previous Lenten witnesses as to how I became a Christian and why it took so long for me to become a Christian. For those of you that don't know me and don't know my background, I am a veteran and a previous senior officer in the Royal Canadian Air Force with 35 years of service. My Epiphany story is a small incident many years ago now for me, but one which I still remember very well. I was a newly promoted young major, and we had moved to Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, the air base there, and I was the base aircraft maintenance engineering officer. I had a staff of 400 personnel, mostly technicians, to look after 120 Tudor training jets, including those flown by the Snowbirds. It was an important job, and I was very proud of my responsibilities. There, we were attending a small Anglican church in Moose Jaw, and Moose Jaw was a small city, only about 25, 30,000 people at the time, and there were three Anglican churches. And we were attending one of the smallest. For reasons that I've previously talked about here in previous witnesses, it was finally there in Moose Jaw that I made a commitment to Christ and started calling myself a Christian. After a couple of years at that church, our minister and his wife, who by then were very good friends of ours, transferred to a larger church in Regina. Because many of the people in the congregation knew that I was a senior officer in the Air Force, they asked me to be part of the committee to help select a new minister. Little did I know that it was going to be much more than just trying to find a new minister. Not surprisingly, it took some time to find candidates and to arrange interviews, etc., etc., and there were no interim priests available. And so the congregation carried on with lay leadership, running the services as normal, but without communion. But then it was decided that members of the search committee would take turns doing a homily for each one of the Sundays in rotation. To be honest, I was a little mortified. Here I was, a brand new committed Christian. How was I supposed to deliver a meaningful homily to a congregation of far more experienced Christians than I was? To be honest, I wasn't sure that I could do it. Now, the person I relate to most in the Bible is the Apostle Thomas. I am the proverbial doubting Thomas. As an engineer, I need to see and understand things firsthand. I analyze and dissect issues and problems, and then I find solutions. My biggest issue in becoming a Christian was learning to trust in the Lord and to be comfortable with something for me that wasn't readily concrete or readily apparent. I wasn't sure how I was going to write, let alone deliver, a meaningful homily. And so I prayed about it. Imagine then, to my surprise, when I read the first reading, the Old Testament reading for that week, which was 2 Kings chapter 5. For those of you that don't remember, that was the story of Naaman being healed of leprosy. Now, Naaman happened to be the commander of the army of the king of Aram. He was an important and very proud man. But he had spoken to a captive girl from Israel, and she told him about a prophet there who would cure him. And so he took gold and silver and precious items to the king of Israel in search of that prophet. Without going into the entire passage, Naaman is angry when he's simply told by that prophet to go bathe in the River Jordan 7 times and that his flesh would be restored and cleansed. He's so angry that he's not going to do it. Finally, one of his servants admonishes him and tells him to go do as he was told, to do as he was instructed. And indeed, he relents, and he does. And he's cured and humbled in the process. So here was a story, as a fellow military commander, about which I could intimately relate to. I don't honestly remember what the New Testament and Gospel readings were that week for that day, but their essence revolved around humility and trusting in the Lord. All of that struck home with me, and I wrote out and later delivered the homily with relative ease. For me, it was a very small step in my Christian journey, and I learned to walk humbly and trust in the Lord along the way. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. Our second storyteller is Kim Jones.
Good morning.
My
name is Rhonda Said, is Kim Jones, and I've been worshiping here at St. Helens since the summer of 2010. I love it here at St. Helens. It's been a wonderful place to worship and grow in understanding and in obedience to God's will for each of us. I've learned so much with such wonderful, faith-filled, and loving people to follow. In 2013, I started on the financial ministry team, though there was only two of us at the time. Louise Garahan was the treasurer, and it was such a joy to work with her. As we worked together, we became good friends, and I enjoyed that time a lot. Over the years, the team grew to include Lynn and Paul, and at Vestry 2016, I became the new treasurer. I can't say I enjoyed every single minute of my new responsibilities. My anxiety would never allow that. But I can say I loved 90% of them. I learned a lot and felt hugely supported by the team and by Louise, who was always ready to answer questions or help in any way she could. They've all been a huge blessing to me, and I treasure them all. And the joy of seeing equations where left equals right can't be understated, and a well-made spreadsheet is still a thing of beauty. I knew the work was important. I knew I was serving the parish, and I derived a lot of satisfaction and pride from the work that I did. Work that not everyone would be capable of doing and certainly wouldn't enjoy doing. I found my place. Now I hardly remember a time when I didn't do that work. It's rare to stay on council for long stretches. Each year, usually in the fall, as I contemplated whether or not to continue, I would search inside for that voice that I believe is spirit-led. Am I good to go another year? The answer was always yes. When Rhonda came to join us, she introduced a new opening to the beginning of council meetings. It is called an examine. And it's a series of questions meant to bring us more in mind of the Spirit as we begin our meetings. The simple questions such as, where have you felt joy? Where have you felt resistance? Are answered silently as we examine ourselves. At the May meeting last year, one of the last questions was something like, what does the Spirit want you to know? With some reference to the future of the parish. The inside voice piped up, it is time. I was surprised, stunned even. The message was so clear. It was time to leave the council table, time to give up the treasurer's position. And how often does that happen when we're given a message to stop our service, to stop our ministry, with no follow-up of do this other thing instead? I almost laughed out loud, not because I was joyful, but because I'm pretty sure that's not what Rhonda intended when she was asking these questions. Okay, I said to the inside voice. Okay. And I spoke to Rhonda and told her it was time. I'm not completely sure how I feel about this yet. Sad? Relieved? Happy? I'll figure all that out when the vestry reports are done. I knew I was tired, though, and I knew I needed a break. Not long after, I had the same conviction about Emmaus. This too? Really? Okay. Having me give up all these activities, why? What's coming down the pipe that I need all that time? Different employment? Illness? Oh, please don't let it be illness. Someone's death? Please don't let it be someone's death. It turns out our first grandchild is expected 1 week before vestry. No one but God knew about that when I was told it is time. Thanks.
Thank you, Kim. And we're excited for you to become a grandma. It's a useful reminder to all of us that when we genuinely pray for the Spirit to tell us what to do, you better mean it when you ask people to do that. So those are two stories, two very different stories of ways in which God spoke to regular, although also extraordinary people, just like you. I invite you now into a time of quiet reflection. When has God revealed God's self to you in ways that you maybe didn't even notice at the time? Or simply to dwell on the memories of those times when you knew exactly what was happening and you cherish and treasure them.